This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Pleasure to be with you. Matt Doyle is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. And the email address is talk@talklouisiana.org. Thanks to making the Spring Member Fest such a success. The one-day drive yesterday was hugely successful. In this hour, 21 of you contributed, so thank you so much. And 8 new members during the 9 to 10 hours. So you made it happen, and because of you, public radio is what it is in Baton Rouge and in South Louisiana. And again, your number is 877-217-5757, and since we're talking about media entities, The Advocate is celebrating, as it should, its first Pulitzer. These things are hard to get, and they generally don't happen to newspapers that are embedded in the South that are of the size of The Advocate, but it happened, and Peter Kovacs is the editor, and today is a notable day because it was 6 years ago today that the change in ownership became official with the George's family in New Orleans taking control of The Advocate from the Manship family, and now a Pulitzer Prize has shown the success of the new leadership. Peter Kovacs, congratulations.
Well, thank you. It's a lot of fun, and it never gets old.
And you've been down this road before, in New Orleans twice, I believe, with the Picayune.
There were 4 Picayune Pulitzers, and they were awarded. There were 2 different years when they won 2 Pulitzers in the same year. So it was, 4 Pulitzers, but, only twice did you lift the champagne.
Well, so collectively 5 Pulitzers, and that's high cotton, as I stated. It generally doesn't happen, and I spent 10 years of my youth in Little Rock, and they won the Pulitzer Prize at the Arkansas Gazette for the coverage of the civil rights upheaval in 1957. In 2005, you've got Hurricane Katrina slamming New Orleans. That was a story that was ripe for coverage, and the Picayune was awarded for his excellence in journalism. And this year, as in the year it's been awarded for 2018, actually, the reporting was about something that most people were unaware of until The Advocate got down in the weeds and did a series of reports about the non-unanimous jury situation in Louisiana, being one of only 2 states to have this, and the legislature took action.
Yes, it was actually one of the more remarkable things I've ever been involved in terms of just the power of the media and achieving a result. Because we began to publish our coverage of this. We spent about a year working on it, and we began to publish our coverage of it on April 1st, which was Easter of 2018. And 7 months later, the voters voted to require unanimous juries, and basically, 900,000 people, voted for something that we put before the state that I would submit probably less than 1% of them knew existed before April 1st.
And now the law has been changed, and The Advocate has benefited from this. Pulitzers are something that newspapers should tout, and you almost won 2 of them.
The way Pulitzers work is that they name 3 finalists, and those are picked by individual juries, and that is done in February. And then the board, which I guess has about 20 people, picks a winner from the finalists. And then on a Monday in April, in this case I think the 15th, they announce the winners, which they do nowadays in a webcast. And it looks like the Academy Awards, except it only takes 10 minutes and it's not full of stupid speeches by the winners. And then afterward, they put online the other finalists. They don't announce the finalists. And so we didn't know we were a finalist in editorial writing until, an hour and a half after the announcement.
877-217-5757. Gordon Russell was a big part of the reporting by The Advocate, and he also was a big part of the reporting in New Orleans when Pulitzers were awarded, wasn't he?
He was involved in the Katrina coverage. This was something that was, he's the best investigative reporter I've ever worked with, and this really was something that much more had his fingerprints on it. The Pulitzer coverage for Katrina involved arguably 200 people, mm-hmm. But this was something he really worked through and shepherded, and you had to make a lot of decisions. You had to build databases from court records, And that's what most of the time was spent on.
Well, it's an honor and congratulations. And the Advocate, of course, is still printing 7 days a week. Your former employer, as we've noted, is down to printed version 3 days a week. The Times-Picayune has decided to do this, as have other newspapers, and in particular those owned by the same people who own the Picayune. Mm-hmm. You still believe in the seven-day-a-week model?
You know, the three-day-a-week model doesn't work, and the truth is they lost the war when they went to 3 days a week. And, you know, if 3 days a week was a good business model, meaning if 3 days a week was something that customers welcomed, then it would have occurred all over the country. And 3 days a week started in Michigan 10 years ago during the recession. And Gannett, which is a very well-run, very money-conscious, publicly traded firm, went to 3 days a week in Detroit and talked about how successful it was. But they never went to 3 days a week in their other markets. And if they really believed it was successful, they would have gone to 3 days a week in Indianapolis or Cincinnati. And they recently, by the way, Gannett recently went to 3 days a week, I think last year or the year before, in Alexandria, and it went
Louisiana,
over,
yeah.
in Louisiana, and it went very poorly, and it was another, it was as if they didn't take the lesson from Detroit in 2009, and so 8 years later they said, maybe we'll try this again, maybe in some smaller markets where fewer people will be angry with us, and they did it in Alexandria, and it was also a disaster.
Well, and they haven't done it with USA Today, but USA Today, which still is a valid entity, it's much smaller than it used to be. It's about half the size, if that, and yeah. and that's a complaint that other newspapers are getting. Is that legitimate?
Yeah. In fact, one of the things that we did since last time I was here was that we went into Lafayette, which is the Daily Advertiser is a Gannett-owned newspaper, and we hired about two-thirds of their staff in one day. And we're growing circulation and growing web traffic in that market. We have more obituaries than they do, which is actually a big thing in newspapering. And, you know, that's another case where, you know, a company that's not in Louisiana was disinvesting in journalism and the community didn't like it.
Well, deaths keep newspapers alive. Obituaries, people pay by the word, right?
Obituaries are interesting because they are advertising, but they are also content, which I don't think people appreciate. You know, when you're in the news business, you think that, you know, your reporters are the stars and people only mm-hmm. buy the thing to read your stories, but people also buy the thing for the ads and the obituaries and the classifieds. And so obituaries are interesting because there are people who get the newspaper and they look at the obituaries religiously. And when you get older, as I am, a lot of the obituaries are, hopefully they're not my contemporaries, because I don't think of myself as that old, but, you know, they're people who might have taught your kids or were neighbors or, you know, people you knew from work or school or church. And when you get older, you gravitate toward the obituaries.
Yes. Bill Maher says he looks at them and he has a new perspective when he sees somebody die at 94. It's like, what happened to him? What caused that? You know, 94 seems so young now. But obituaries, we used to see stock tables in every newspaper in the country. Even the New York Times has done away with it. Those days are gone, I would think.
Those days are, I mean, there wasn't enough. When I was at the Picayune in the heyday of this, there were 5 pages of this a day. But over time, people got where they find it on the Internet. And, of course, now you can, you know, instead of having to look through all the stocks to find the ones you own, you can go to a page and look at the stocks you own and how much they went up or down. So people just weren't using the newspaper for that.
And last year we had Jan Moeller, former newspaper guy, bellyache about the lack of box scores in newspapers. And the Advocate made a change. I see you're doing the Astros now.
We've had some requests for the Astros, and, you know, box scores are tough because the games are so unpredictable. I'm a big baseball fan, but, the games take so long, and all the new metrics they've introduced into baseball really add to the length. You know, you probably remember this. When we were young, a team probably carried, 9 or 10 pitchers, and now they carry 13 pitchers, and they're trading out 3 pitchers an inning. And so the games just take so long, and it's very hard to get them in. And also, like stock tables, it's another thing where people are getting it on the Internet.
They're getting it on the internet, but it was always nice to have it on one page.
And there
are some newspapers, the aforementioned Arkansas Democrat Gazette, they still do box scores.
Oh, do they? Okay. I mean, I like it. I'm a baseball fan, but, you know, it's a business, and it had less and less people looking at it for the amount of ink and newsprint and trees you cut down and whatever.
Well, we're going to talk with Peter Kovacs about The Advocate, where it is and where it is going. And, of course, this has been a big news year. We've seen a lot of sports on the front page of The Advocate in the last few months, and we'll talk with him about that and more. And if you'd like to join the conversation with the 5-time Pulitzer Prize winner, Peter Kovacs, 877-217-5757, and email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. We'll be back with more after this brief timeout. And once again, congratulations to you for making the spring member drive a success. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Peter Kovacs is with us, editor of The Advocate since May 1 of 2013, that's 6 years ago today, managing editor of the New Orleans Times-Picayune from 1983 to 2012, 29 years, and assistant city editor Birmingham News, June 1978 to September 1983, almost 5 years at a newspaper in the great state of Alabama, and George Corley Wallace was governor for most of that time. This was at the end of his life, but he and Edwin Edwards, another governor you know well, and Jerry Brown are the only governors in our lifetime who have served 16 years, 4 terms, and talk about 3 varied characters. George Wallace was, even at the end, an amazing force of nature.
He was. You know, he had been shot and was in pain by the time, you know, by the fourth term as governor. He was in pain, and he really was not. He was not the force he had been in the earlier terms.
Well, he recanted a lot of his previous beliefs too.
He did, and by the end, he was as a Democrat. His core constituents were black voters in Alabama, which I thought was interesting, and I always thought that, you know, the real truth about George Wallace was that he didn't believe in anything other than George Wallace.
Well, before we go to our phone lines, there are those who compare Trump with President Trump with Governor Wallace. Is that fair to the president, or is that unfair?
I mean, they're men of different eras. I mean, you know, some of their appeal was sticking a thumb in the eye of the elites and, you know, saying things that I think they both, you know, had a gift for saying things that their supporters agreed with and admired them for saying when others wouldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, Wallace was popular in Alabama, but he and I think one difference between Wallace and Trump is that, you know, Wallace has changed his base, you know, of who supported him. And you know, Trump, you know, plays to his base and his political model. The political model historically for a president was to win with your base and then expand outward. And, you know, Trump's model seems to be to, you know, to win with your base and build your base and figure they'll turn out. And we'll see if he's right, I guess, a year from now.
Well, I was a kid, as were you, in 1968 and in 72, and those Wallace rallies were something to behold. And, of course, he was shot May 15th, 1972, in Maryland by Arthur Brimmer, who's now out of jail, believe it or not. But,
oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's amazing. You can shoot George Wallace and shoot Ronald Reagan, and both people who did it are
out of jail.
877-217-5757, Neil in Lafayette. Neil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Peter Kovacs, editor of The Advocate.
Hi. Thanks for so much for your work on the unanimous jury story. I'm so proud that The Advocate got the Pulitzer, and I'm just even more happy that you did it. I think it's wonderful.
Well,
but, of course, I have a criticism, and I read The Advocate online. And I counted up one time the number of stories that were about news versus the number of what I would consider news versus the number of stories that were about sports. If you look at the online edition, you get like 3 news stories. One of them is going to be the rundown, which is great, but, you know, it's not exactly a news story in itself. And 40 stories about everything from high school baseball to, you know, hockey.
Okay. Well, first of all, I appreciate your thoughts on the unanimous juries. We're very proud of it. And frankly, we're also proud of, I think, the voters of Louisiana really responded, you know, well to that. And political leaders in Louisiana, you know, united around that. You know, sports, the thing about that's different between printed newspaper journalism and online journalism is that online journalism, you get much more instantaneous feedback. And so online journalism is sort of more governed by, you know, you give people what they want, and people want sports coverage. And when, you know, if you look every day, I get a report on what the most looked at things online are, and they tend to be sports coverage.
And sports has been on the front page of The Advocate a lot. This Will Wade story just keeps on giving, doesn't it?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
And The Advocate, I'm sure, will cover it. But you have a lot of good reporters who are following that story earnestly. We had Bryn Stoll on here, and he's done a fantastic job covering that. I have a feeling it's going to continue for a little while.
I think it's going to go on for a little while. The whole model of big-time college sports is broken, if you think about it. And there's so much money that goes with success, and it doesn't go to the players. And this is, you know, one thing I majored in economics in college, and one thing I remember, I don't remember most of college, but one thing I remember in college is that when the business model of something is not purely based on market forces, you know, market forces intrude. And what's happening in college sports is a case in point, because getting these elite players is very, very valuable to programs, and you can't pay them, but there are people who want, there's money that wants to flow into this. Mm-hmm. And so it flows in sort of corrupt ways. And I don't know what the solution is, but what they're doing now doesn't work.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. It's true, and of course I am the proprietor of Tiger Rag, which is a publication about LSU sports, and your newspaper brands itself as the official newspaper of LSU sports.
Yes, we are. That's a deal we have. We have a similar deal with the Saints, and actually now we have a similar deal with the Cajuns.
And the Saints sparked three editorials, I believe, from your very good staff, which is Danny Heitman and Lanny Keller and you. Mm-hmm. I don't know who wrote them, but three editorials about that blown call. You were lathered up about that, weren't you?
Well, not only were we lathered up, but the entire state was lathered up about it. And we actually published a front page editorial about that, which captured the popular sentiment of the thing. I don't really know what the NFL could have done about it. I was a little surprised that the commissioner sort of hid for a week before he addressed it, and maybe he could have addressed it sooner.
Joe Paris in Lafayette writes, please look into your Pulitzer crystal ball, Peter Kovacs, and forecast the future of the newspaper business. He asks, more video, more tabloid size, what changes are coming?
Okay. You know, the newspaper business is a tough business and mostly has been a declining business, but not for us, because we have expanded our footprint outward, and I guess the person who sent that was from Lafayette. We just, you know, hired the managing editor of the Daily Advertiser and the sports editor and four reporters, and last year we hired two business writers, and we launched a daily business newsletter. You know, I don't think print is dead, and I don't think daily print is dead, but another thing we did that is aimed at securing our future is that we instituted a digital subscription model, which actually we launched that on the day we won the Pulitzer, which was, people think it was something deliberate, but it was actually kind of a coincidence. And it's designed to start making subscriber money off of digital content. And if you look at what the New York Times is doing, you know, that's increasingly is their business model, is those digital subscribers.
Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Henry, we're about to go to a break, so try to be as brief as you can, please.
Okay, Mr. Peter, I'm a paying subscriber, been for quite a few years and everything. Finally, Sunday morning, y'all missed me. And for the life of me, I get up 4 o'clock in the morning, I went out for my walk, and everybody else had their paper but me. They wouldn't take my call, even on the recorded contraption, until 7 o'clock.
Okay. I'm glad you called me about that, and I'm sorry that happened, and that was not a problem I knew of. You know, my email is pkovacs@theadvocate.com, and there's a handful of people who email me about subscription problems, and I make sure, and I welcome it. I'm glad they want the newspaper, and I make sure that someone gets in touch with them.
And someone may have been out for a walk earlier than you, Henry, and actually taken your newspaper. There are these sinister forces that steal newspapers, believe it or not, and I know about it. We'll talk more. 877-217-5757. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Another segment with Peter Kovacs on the 6th anniversary of the new ownership of The Advocate. It began May 1, 2013 for a newspaper that traces its roots 177 years ago. And The Advocate is savoring its first Pulitzer. And many newspapers, of course, never win one, but The Advocate got one last month for its coverage last year, a series of reports about the non-unanimous jury law in Louisiana, which was changed by the voters. 877-217-5757 in our remaining time with Peter Kovacs, and you can email us talk@talklouisiana.org. Here's one from Hal, listening online in Monroe, asking about the quality of reporters. You are proud graduate of Brown University, where you were the editor of the newspaper at that great school in Providence, Rhode Island, Ivy League school. How's the quality of the people coming out of school these days?
You know, there are still a lot of young, good, talented young people who want to go into this. It's a fun business to be in, and I always tell young people, you know, if you look at the economics of it, maybe you'd be a little scared, but I always tell young people that, you know, when you're 20 or 21, like if you don't believe in yourself at that age, you never will, because you're free to try something. You know, you don't have obligations. You might have student debt, but that's about the worst of it. Mm-hmm. And also our ability to lure talent is better. One sort of tangential consequence of winning a Pulitzer is I think it helps you lure talent. And another thing that's going on in the business is that there are so many journalism employers you wouldn't want to work for, that helps us lure talent.
Well, and sometimes you get talent and then they go off to these high-paying jobs in public relations and state government, in particular in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. It's hard to compete with that, isn't it?
You know, it's hard to compete with that, but if people want that lifestyle, then that's what they want. And, I'm glad for them. I know a lot of people from when I was, you know, a young reporter who didn't stay in journalism, but what they learned in journalism, you know, just the ability to write quickly, the ability to sort of synthesize facts, the ability to appreciate how the public will take something. You know, all those are useful skills, and you don't lose those skills.
Is it possible to go from journalism to public relations and then go back, or is once you cross that line, it's forever gone?
It's difficult. I don't know that many people who've done it. And then there's also another aspect of it is, depending on what you did in public relations, there'd be some question about whether you hired someone who was compromised by their employment, but it doesn't happen very often.
My guess is that public relations would not have been your thing.
No, I never actually considered public relations.
So. And unlike a lot of journalists, you've been largely, three places in 41 years.
Yeah.
That's rare.
And actually I think I think one benefit is having mostly been a journalist in Louisiana, particularly I realize this now that I'm older, is, you understand things contextually that other people don't understand. Just sort of as a simple matter, getting back to obituaries, when people die, I, just being older and having practiced this in Louisiana for 35 years, I have some sense of what they were at their apex and how to regard them in terms of an obituary.
Herman Anopoulos writes, "Congrats on the Pulitzer, Peter. I'm a former newspaper journalist who increasingly ran into people in their 40s, 30s, and younger who have no interest in newspapers, don't check websites. How do you reach them?
That's a challenge, and but I do think that young people have an interest in news. They just sort of consume it differently. And, you know, the challenge for us is that there's so much sort of clutter out there that we, you know, that we need to break through that to reach them. But, you know, there's not a lot of journalistic coverage of Louisiana. And that's, you know, we're the biggest journalistic organization in Louisiana. And our aim is, you know, our aim is to be the biggest and the best, not just in Louisiana, but in every market we compete in.
877-217-5757 in our remaining time with Peter Kovacs. And some questions have come in via email at talk@talklouisiana.org. And Tracy at the Capitol notes a feature that you ran, the newspaper did, about Jim Richardson, the retiring head of the Revenue Estimating Conference. And he assessed the governors that he worked with. And Tracy is asking me to ask you about the governors that you have covered in Louisiana. I guess it starts with Edwin Edwards.
Well, actually, when I arrived here, Dave Treen was governor.
It was at the end of Treen. Yeah,
and Edwin Edwards was fixing to whup him and did whup him. And, you know, Edwards was, I would rate Edwards as the governor who was best for the news business by far and away, both in terms of creating news, creating scandal. You know, he was very witty. You know, his election, you know, his race against Duke was kind of an epic, you know, probably one of the biggest, you know, the handful of biggest things I ever remember covering. You know, the other ones, Romer
came after Edwards.
Romer came before and after Edwards, right. I guess.
Or Edwards came before and after Romer.
Or something like that. Yeah. Romer came in between Edwards, and he was interesting to cover, too. He seemed to have, like, lost interest in being governor. But Edwards was by far and away, you know, the most entertaining.
Mike Foster?
Mike Foster was, like, you know, all business. He was always sort of courteous. I remember being invited over to the mansion and having lunch with Mike Foster soon after he became governor, and him talking about how he had arrived at the mansion and none of the inmates knew how to fry fish correctly, and he had to go into the kitchen and teach them how to fry fish.
He didn't find any of them sleeping on his couch, though.
No, he didn't have that problem, don't think. He built the fence, though.
I know he did, much to the chagrin of Bill Jefferson, who ended up being fenced in another way for a few years. Mm-hmm. Kathleen Blanco.
She was always very businesslike, you know, very decent to us. I remember the first time I had lunch with her as governor, you know, my older son played competitive tennis, actually was the high school tennis champion, and we chatted about all the times that I had been in Lafayette watching my son play tennis and where we played and all that. You know, I always thought that the truth about Katrina is that whoever was governor during Katrina was going to have a hard time getting reelected. And if you look at other communities that had disasters, they tended to throw out the elected leaders during, you know, at the next opportunity because they felt like the community wasn't recovering fast enough. And then, you know, 10 years later, I think they had a more sober perspective on how the recovery went. And I was felt bad for Governor Blanco on that score.
Bobby Jindal.
Well, I knew Bobby Jindal because he went to Brown.
But at a different time.
At a different time. He was younger than I. There's two differences between me and Bobby Jindal among Brown graduates. One is that he's younger by probably 14 or 15 years. And the second is that I guarantee you he studied harder when he was up there. And, but I knew him before he was really famous because, not, you know, at the time, I don't know if this is still true, there were probably like 200 Brown graduates in all of Louisiana, which is, you know, like a zip code in Boston. And so there'd be functions, you know, they would have meetings. And so I knew him, you know, before everybody had heard of him.
What do you think his legacy will be?
Well, you know, he left office unpopular. He, I guess, did not succeed as a presidential candidate. You know, he has about a monthly column in the Wall Street Journal. I don't know if you knew that.
I know he writes for the Wall Street Journal, but it's a regular column?
It's pretty regular. If I had to guess, I would guess it's monthly, but I don't know what the schedule of it is. I think when people look back on him after 20 years, what he did with the hospital system was the kind of thing that governors before him always wished they could pull off, and he did pull it off.
He's only 47, so he has a chance to, of course, reinvent himself, as Jerry Brown did in California, youngest and oldest governor in the history of the Golden State. John Bel Edwards, what do you make of him in his first 3 years?
He's always been very respectful and businesslike and responsive, and I know he comes on your show. He seems
open.
Pardon?
He's open to.
Yeah, I don't know how often he comes on your show.
Well, he does his own show once a month.
Oh, okay.
So
right.
He definitely is available to the public and to a fault.
Yeah, and he's always been very respectful, and when they don't like some of the coverage, they've always been very courteous in conveying that. And I always, I don't mind when people tell us they don't like the coverage. I think, we do this every day. It evolves. And as we understand issues better, we try to incorporate that in our coverage.
What are his chances of reelection?
I would think they're pretty good just based on the number of people who chose not to run against him.
And a listener asks, why does the Advocate no longer endorse candidates?
The endorsing of candidates, actually, when the Manships owned the Advocate, they stopped endorsing candidates in the 90s. And so when I arrived as editor, I already arrived at a place that was not endorsing candidates. I think endorsing candidates is old-fashioned. When I was at the Picayune, they endorsed candidates, although I was not involved in it. And probably their most famous endorsement was Ray Nagin. And, I was not involved in that. I was involved in the news coverage of it. But I always was worried when they did that they didn't really know that much about the guy. And I think that's an argument for not endorsing. Another thing that happens is that you endorse a candidate and then your people think your news coverage is tilted by that endorsement.
And a listener notes, this is David saying that there was a front page endorsement of Buddy Romer in 1987, which may have won the election for Charles Elson, Buddy Romer.
Right. The Picayune was very forward in endorsing Buddy Romer. And really the two, I was at the Picayune for 29 years, and the Romer and Nagin endorsements were the two cases where they took someone and probably helped make them. And neither of those guys was completely successful.
Peter Kovacs, thank you and congratulations. And it's always a pleasure. Glad that you're open to coming on periodically, and we'll be calling again soon.
Okay, thanks a lot.
We'll be back with Rob Maness.